Okay, good afternoon, everybody. We'll start with a little parsha, as always on Thursdays. There's a the beginning of the parsha just has this fascinating exchange between Yosef and Paro, and it's somewhat startling because Paro has these dreams. He asks for people to interpret the dreams. Apparently, he's unhappy with everybody's interpretation of the dreams, and even though they do try, people try to interpret the dream, but it doesn't work. And then finally, they recall Yosef, and they bring Yosef, and Vayomer Paro Yosef Chalom Chalamti Posere Noso Vani Shamati Alech Lemor Tishma Chalom Leftoro. So I heard that you know how to interpret dreams, and Yosef says, "No, I do not." Elokim Yaneh Shalom Paro. And then right away, Vayidaber Paro El Yosef, Paro tells Yosef what it was, and Yosef interprets the dream, and of course Paro says, okay, you're hired. You're now going to be the second in command over all of Mitzrayim. Now, that is such a strange series of events for a number of reasons. First of all, what was the brilliance of Yosef's interpretation? I mean, the dreams were about cows and grain. So Yosef came up with this great idea that it might be about food, that maybe if there are fat cows and there are skinny cows, maybe that's about lots of food and not so much food. I mean, I could have come up with that. You know, that didn't seem so surprising. Not only that, the pasuk says ve'ein posero sam leparo, that the interpreters, there was no one to interpret it for Paro. Rashi comments, posum ayu osam. There were plenty of people giving it a stab, trying to interpret. Avalo leparo, but none of it resonated with Paro. Shelo haya kol nichnas ba'aznav. Their voices just didn't resonate. It didn't go into his ears. Velo haya lo karas ruach bepisronim. It didn't make him feel comfortable with what they were saying. Shayu omrim sheva banos ata molid v'sheva banos ata kover. They were telling him, you're going to have seven daughters, and then those seven daughters are going to die. Also, a bit of a strange thing. Why would they tell him that he's going to have seven daughters and then the seven daughters are going to die? First of all, cows, the first thing you think of is daughters? That was their first shot? Oh, if you dreamt about big fat cows, that probably means that you're going to have daughters. That seems a little bit surprising. If I was Paro, I'd be a little insulted by that insinuation. And then that the seven daughters are going to die. And Paro just, they must have, it's just difficult to understand. Why would they guess that? And why would Paro not be interested in what they have to say? But as soon as Yosef says what he has to say, not only does it resonate with Paro, not only does it something that Paro feels connected to, so I would think he would say, okay, now you're hired as my dream interpreter. That's not what he did. He hired him to be the one that oversees the food supply for the entire world. I mean, that's what he hired him to do. He hired him as the one who's going to be now the most powerful person on the planet because he knew how to interpret a dream. So he's now hired as the most powerful person on the planet. Very, very difficult to understand what's going on in this episode. I thought of that maybe we can apply an idea that I heard many years ago on a tape from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, Zichrono Livracha, in one of his Parsha Shiurim. Rabbi Bernstein, for those who don't know, used to give a legendary Parsha Shiur in England, in the Neri Yisrael congregation, the Neri Yisrael Shul in England. It is not affiliated with the yeshiva in Baltimore. It's a modern Orthodox congregation in England. It happens to be called Neri Yisrael. I once spoke there at Neri Yisrael, not at the one in Baltimore, at the one in England, and I quoted Rabbi Bernstein, having no idea that he was at all connected to the place even. I just knew that he gave great Parsha Shiurim. And someone came over to me afterwards and said, the building that we're in right now was built very largely on the donations, not just donations, on the proceeds of the sales of Rabbi Bernstein's Parsha tapes. It used to be there was no such thing as Wayu Torah, and if someone had something really good to offer, they would make tapes and they would sell them. That's how Rabbi Friend used to, now he does it online, but they used to sell the Rabbi Friend, box set tapes and the Rabbi Wine and so Rabbi Bernstein had these Parsha tapes, and they sold so many of them that largely the guy told me the building was built on the proceeds of those sales, which is just remarkable. But Rabbi Bernstein had a 30-second vart that I think is just like, it so rings true. And it's tam a good var to have in general. I was just talking to Shana Bet guys at Yeshivat Oraita, and I was telling them, like, when you have a good Dvar Torah, the best Dvar Torah to have is one that no matter who you say it to, they could say, yeah, that makes sense, you know, or like that's a nice message, like that's a worthy message. You know, you might have a beautiful brisker rav that explains a gavra and a chavtza and whatever, but you know, and among your chevra, they're like, that's a great shtickle Torah, but you know, sometimes when you're outside of your chevra, they'll be like, what is this guy talking about? Like, what's this about? So it's always good to have like something that like could resonate with everybody. So Bernstein said that he once shared under a chuppah the following vart. That's also an old style thing. It used to be that that rabbis would speak under chuppahs. Thankfully, that minhag is no longer practiced unless you grew up in Fairlawn. Rabbi Yudin speaks under every chuppah, and it's worth it. But outside of that, generally you don't find it so much that rabbanim speak under chuppahs anymore. But Rabbi Bernstein said he was speaking under a chuppah, and he told the Chasam Kala the following. At the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, Parshas Vayeshev starts out with Yosef in this amazing position. He's the favorite son of Yaakov Avinu. He has a personal chavrusa with Yaakov Avinu. When all of his brothers have to be out doing their thing, he gets to sit and learn with Yaakov. He's got this fancy coat. He's on top of the world. Everything's great. At the end of Parshas Vayeshev, Yosef is stuck in this Egyptian jail with no promise of getting out anytime soon. And no one that cares about him, no one to connect to in the entire world, like everything is terrible. And then at the beginning of Parshas Miketz, he starts off in that Egyptian jail, as Paro's having these dreams. Yosef is in the Egyptian jail. And by the end of Parshas Miketz, Yosef is the most powerful man in the entire world. Rabbi Bernstein said very simply, what did Yosef do so wrong in between the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev and the end? And what did he do so right in between the end of Parshas Vayeshev and the end of Parshas Miketz? Meaning, what exactly were the turning points? What was the point of inflection? What happened that made Yosef's life turn around entirely twice? That he had this crazy life trajectory. He starts out up here, goes all the way down, and all the way back up, even higher than he was before. What's the nekuda that caused that to happen? And Bernstein said very simply, at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, we're told about Yosef going to all of his brothers and telling them about his dreams, about what he was thinking about what his aspirations are. Vayomer aleihem, shimuna hachalom hazeh asher chalamti. You need to hear what's on my mind. You need to hear what my dreams are. You need to hear what my aspirations are. You need to hear about what I'm thinking about. And at the end of Parshas Vayeshev, Yosef has a turning point. Because what happens? Yosef realizes that he's with these two other guys in this jail cell. Ve'avo aleihem Yosef baboker vayarosam v'inezo afim. And he sees that they're sad. Ve'yishal esrisei paro asher ito b'mishmar beis Adonav lemar, madua pneichem ra'im hayom. And he turns to them and he says, what's the matter? Tell me your dreams. Tell me what's bothering you. Tell me what's on your mind. And when he makes that turn, from going around to telling everybody what's on his mind, telling everybody his dreams, to now start to say, tell me what's on your mind, tell me your dreams, that turns his entire life around. That turns everything around. One is not going to become powerful or popular by going around just sharing about what's on your own mind without expressing concern for others, having no care about other people and the way other people are going to perceive things and the way other people are going to react to what you have to say. It's not going to work, ultimately. It's only when Yosef is able to turn it around and he's able to start asking other people. And Yosef had this tendency almost to not care about what other people think, whether it be the way he spoke to his brothers, whether it be in dealing with Eshes Potiphar, in which case it was a good thing that he didn't care what other people think and what the consequences of his actions were. But then, in this Egyptian jail, he turned to someone else and he said, what do you think? Tell me what's on your mind. And that turns everything around. If there's one thing that Paro realizes as a melech, that it is that a melech, when he goes to sleep at night, a melech has to be thinking about other people before he thinks about himself. If there is some powerful message that has to be delivered to a melech, it's never about the melech himself. I remember when I was younger, when My good friend Charlie Harari got married, so we made Sheva Brachos for the Hararis, for Charlie and Dina. All the friends got together. I wasn't involved in making the Sheva Brachos. I attended. Maybe my wife made a dish or something, I don't know. But at the Sheva Brachos, Charlie spoke. So yeah, we got a free Charlie Harari speech. And at the Sheva Brachos, he said, you know, that that we're told that a chassan is dama lemelech, that a chassan is like a king. And he said, well, in what way is a chassan dama lemelech? How is a chassan at all like a king? And he said that that generally, when a person, before a person is married, you can go to sleep at night and you can be worried about yourself first and foremost. But once a person is married, so then there is no way you can go to sleep at night without thinking about somebody else before yourself, without putting someone else in front of yourself. A chassan is dama lemelech, because that's what a melech is. Malchus doesn't mean that a person is powerful and he could do whatever he wants, and he can. That malchus means that you have the weight of the responsibility of the entire people on your shoulders. That you now have to think about not just somebody else, everybody else. And your every decision has to be taken into account the good of the people, or the greatest good of the people. You always have to be thinking about somebody else. And in that sense, a chassan is dome lemelech. But that's what malchus really is. So yeah, Paro has all these interpreters. They come to interpret his dream and they tell him, you know, I'm sure some of them guessed that it had something to do with food. Maybe some of them said that your royal butchers are going to prepare for you the greatest seven feasts you've ever had, and then you're going to host seven state dinners, that the food is going to be terrible, or something like that. I'm sure there were people that had guesses about food. But look at the example Rashi gave. Rashi said, based on the Medrash, that the guess was that you're going to have seven daughters, and your seven daughters are going to die. What does that have to do with the Malchus? That's about him. And probably all the guesses were about him. Because when people look at a melech, they don't understand what a melech is. People look at a melech and they think, wow, must be great to be king. I'm not going to break out into song right now, but it must be really amazing to be the king, that you're so powerful and you're so great and you're so honored and you're so, wow. So when a commoner looks at a melech's dreams and at a melech's thoughts, he thinks this must be about the melech. It must be about his power. It must be about his influence. It must be about his money. It must be about something like that. And they don't think, that it doesn't occur to them, that if a melech is having a dream, if there's a message that's being conveyed to a melech, it's got to be about the people. It's got to be about the country. And Yosef is the first one that comes and he says, if you're having a dream, the dream is about the country. The country is about to experience 7 years of plenty, and then it's going to experience 7 years of famine. And you're being given a message because you're the one in charge of taking care of this country. You need to make sure that the people are going to be okay. And as the most powerful man in the world, you have to be the one that takes care of the rest of the world. And that's what Yosef picks up on. And Paro right away recognizes not just that he knew how to interpret a dream, but that he knew how to think about what a melech goes through. He knew how to think about what it means to be a melech. He says, a person who understands that is qualified. That's the qualification that you need. And not only his intelligence, not only the fact that he was God-fearing or whatever else, what he was looking for, what Paro perhaps was looking for, was the ability of Yosef to think outside of himself. And it's such a critical, critical idea that Yosef doesn't just look at other people. You know, think about how this all started. Go back to Rabbi Bernstein's word, that he said to people, tell me your dreams. It didn't just happen that he said to people, tell me your dreams. He said to two people that were sitting in the jail with him, he said to them, I don't understand. Madua pnechem ra'im hayom. Madua pnechem ra'im hayom? You don't know why these people might be upset? How about the fact that they're sitting in jail and they used to be respected officers in the king's court? And now they're likely going to die in a jail cell in a dungeon somewhere. Madua pnechem ra'im hayom? What kind of question? Elamai, Yosef must have been so sensitive. He must have been paying such careful attention that he saw that even though they're normally sad, they're even sadder today. They're even more upset today. There's some nuance of difference. There's some change in their mood today. One only recognizes that if you're really looking. If you're really looking at other people first. And this was the message that Yosef had to learn. This was the idea that Yosef had to learn before he could be raised to any position of stature. His dreams were going to come true, right? The Ramban writes that he went out of his way to make sure that his dreams came true. But before his dreams could come true, he had to learn how to pay attention to other people's dreams. Before his dreams could come true, he had to learn how to pay attention to what was going on around him, to the emotions of the people around him. I've often told the story about when I was in yeshiva in Keren Biavne, and I was learning Musar Seder with my chavrusa, who is a big tzaddik, was then and still is a very big tzaddik. And we were talking about chesed or something like that, and I said, well, that's a nice message, you know, like after we get out of yeshiva, we should probably do some chesed, you know, but like in yeshiva, there's no chesed to be done. Like, what kind of chesed do you do in yeshiva? Everyone's so happy, like, it's yeshiva, what could be bad about yeshiva, you know? Like, I was just like in this bubble, in this world, like, you get to learn like 14 hours a day, you know, your food is provided for, great chavrusas, great rebbeim, it's awesome, like, what could be bad about this? And I remember my chavrusa at the time, he closed the sefer that we were learning, he looks at me and he said, really? What chesed can be done in yeshiva? And he started giving me examples of guys who were struggling with different things that I was just totally oblivious to. Guys I barely even knew, because I'm, you know, generally not a friendly person, but guys that I barely even knew. And he said, you know what this guy's going through? And it would mean a lot if you gave him a smile once in a while, if you would say good morning once in a while, if you felt like you had a friend and what that guy's going through. There's always chesed to be done within our own chevras. If we look around a little bit, you know, sometimes in, you know, particularly when you're in a big yeshiva like ours, it feels like everyone's just, it can feel like, not always, but it can feel like everyone's just like sort of circling in their own orbits. And, you know, you sort of like assume everyone else is fine. You know, you assume that everyone has their thing, their circle, their place to be. And, you know, it's sometimes we have a tendency to take a little bit of the friendliness out of the place, or to not imbue it with enough friendliness, with enough of a smile. And we never know what other people are going through. But there are people in every yeshiva, and certainly yeshiva the size of ours, and you think like, oh, but Smicha guy's got it all figured out. So if a guy is in Smicha, then, you know, then for sure he's happy about everything, and everything's going great in his life, and there's nothing at all to worry about, because Smicha guys, they got it all figured out. As I say it, you realize how absurd that sounds, right? Meaning a person should always err on the side of caution. And obviously I'm speaking to myself more than to anybody else here, and I actually, you know, like, I know speakers always say that, but like, I actually mean it, you know, to always are on the side of more friendliness, of an extra word of encouragement, an extra smile, even with a mask, people could see the smile in your eyes, it works anyway, you know, to make sure that it's that you're not going around like Yosef at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, hey everybody, listen to my dreams because I have aspirations and I'm thinking about where my life is taking me and I have such talents and I have such, you know, and I know that I could do great things. Think about other people. Think about everybody else and how they're doing, and what you can do to help others, and that ultimately is going to make what's going to make a person a great leader. So while the advantage of a message like that, like I mentioned before, is that it resonates with everybody, everyone could appreciate the value of caring for other people, of thinking about other people, but it's also true. It's also true that that those who deflect attention from themselves, and it's countercultural in today's day and age to deflect attention from yourself and to look at how you could pay attention to other people. We've discussed this many, many times. It's totally countercultural. The whole culture in the social media culture in particular is all about look at me and look at my successes and let everyone see and how many people can say that they like what I'm doing and that they want to share what I'm doing and maybe something clever that I said will go viral and that's like success in life is if you know you say something clever and the whole world gets to see just how snappy you are and how it's countercultural but ultimately humanity is humanity, and those who will succeed are always going to be those who express that, you know, the most valuable human midos and instincts. My kids were telling me, I don't know if you guys know anything about this, probably not, you probably know less about this than I do, but my kids were telling me about some boxing match that happened between two people. Did I talk to you guys about this? I was like very confused about this. There was some boxing match that happened. I said, okay, who fought who? They said, oh, Mike Tyson fought, which is like crazy to me. And the guy must be 70. I don't know. He's older than me. I know that. So that's crazy. And then they said, oh, and this other guy fought against. And I said, I don't know who that is. And they said, oh no, he's a social media influencer. What does he do? He's mashpia because he succeeded in what? No, he's mashpia because he's a social media influencer. That's what he does. He just makes stupid videos of himself, and he gets millions of people to say that's great. I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get, like, should I just, should I become a social media influencer? No, you should not be a social media influencer. I said, I just need to understand more. I said, let me just Google it. How do I, what's the guy's, do not Google it. They totally do not Google the fellow's name. I mean, that's the culture that we live in, that's what people strive for, to just, whatever stupid thing is going through their head is just going to be publicized to everybody. We need a little more of telling me your dreams, a little more of hearing about what other people's struggles are, what other people are going through. And that's, ultimately our jobs, not only as Jews, but as future rabbis of the Jewish people. That we're there, we're an eved to the Am Hashem. We're eved to Avdei Hashem. And that's the goal. That's success. That would be the ideal for all of us, Bezras Hashem. Okay.